Welcome back to another episode of the Exterminatus Podcast, your one-stop shop for all things competitive in the world of Warhammer 40,000. I'm your host, Eric. With me is my co-host, Ray.
Hello.
And we've had quite a bit of new products, some old products that maybe weren't readily available are now available individually. And of course, we got the great coming of the Codex Chaos Knigget. So very excited about that. We also got our usual tournament roundup. So a lot to go over this week. So without further ado, Ray, let's dive into some of the new stuff. So Eldar fans get a tasty little treat coming out this week.
I really think it's more of a finally kind of thing here.
Yeah, so Plastic Spirit Seer, you've seen this model before. It was originally included in the Wake the Dead box set. Finally available individually. So no more fine cast for you Iandan players. So kind of nice to get that finally out and about. For Chaos players, something new and different. The slates for the new Traitor Commissar and Traitor Ogryn have come out. And some interesting tidbits of information here. So looking at the Traitor Commissar to start with, he is power level 4, so I'm not sure what that translates into points. Probably can't believe he's almost 100 points. Does that sound right? Seems so.
Yeah, about 80-ish.
That sounds a little closer. So, usual nonsense. He's a single model, comes with a bolt pistol and power fist. But here's where it gets interesting. He's got the ability to models within 6 inches can use his leadership. But the interesting is the keyword. It specifically says traitor guardsman. So is this something down the road that we will finally see a traitor guardsman army from, as opposed to some hodgepodge of conversions? Don't know. But it definitely does not help your cultists if you were thinking that. So, less and less love for the cultist every day. So, yeah, they get the friendly creator guardsman within 6 inches, get to use his leadership, up in vol, and then forward for the dark gods. At the start of the movement phase, you can pick one friendly traitor guardsman unit. Within 6 inches, that unit suffers one mortal wound, and until the end of the turn, add 3 to their advance and charge rolls made for that unit. And interesting enough, yeah, it's not bad. Don't remember guardsmen being particularly frightening in close combat, but I guess if you get a big enough blob and you need an additional 3 inches, why not? So, but interesting, his keywords are chaos and servants of the abyss. So maybe there's another faction coming down the pike. Who knows?
Could be the new catch-all for Traitor Guard.
It could be. I don't know. It'd be, are we going to see new models? Are we going to see just, we're going to rehash all the new stuff from, what's the name of the box set? The Black Fortress stuff. And they're just going to redo that. Who knows? So not really sure. All right. Looking at the Chaos Ogryn, he's also power level 4. So we're guessing right around that 80-point level. He's armed with a Mutlo and a Scavenged Maul. So that gives him, the Scavenged Maul is a strength plus 2, AP minus 1, flat damage of 2. And the Mutant Claw is strength user, which happens to be strength 5. AP minus 2, flat 2 damage, but it has a stiffy little thing. Each time the bearer fights, before the bearer makes any other attacks, it can make one and only one attack with this weapon. If the attack hits, you can reroll hits for attacks made by the bearer that target that unit until the end of the phase. So basically, his little lobster claw strikes out at you. If he hits you, you're not getting away, and he beats you over the head with the Savage Maul. And then other nifty abilities, he's got the Avalanche of Muscle, which some people think of that as large, burly people from Gold's Gym. I think of that as just a preponderance of seafood. But anyway, moving on. Add 1 to attack's characteristics for this model during a turn in which they made a successful charge. Bodyguard, every time the Commissar loses a wound, on a 3+. Interesting, a 3+, not a 2+. On a 3+, the Commissar does not lose the wound, but the friendly model suffers a mortal wound. And then last but not least, the Blasphemous Icon. Before moving in this movement, this model in the movement phase, roll a d6. On a 6, the model regains a lost wound. You can add 2 inches to the model's move characteristics until the end of the phase. Not shabby.
Not at all.
Ah, we found the points values. Here we go. So the Ogryn actually is in it, clocks in at 65 points. The Commissars are mere 50 points.
Wow.
Yeah. Hmm. Now I kind of wish it could affect my cultists. That's kind of cheap.
No, it'll never happen because there's too much of a difference between a cultist and even something like a traitor guard.
Oh, I know. But just wishful thinking. So, but it's pretty neat. So, yeah, curious to see if this is the birth of a new faction kind of slowly and churning away. So there they are. The models look really awesome. Usually not, I've previously have been a major downer when it came to Chaos Guard, but if this is what they're going to look like moving forward, oh, these guys look awesome. So very excited about that. The other great thing, new product that came out that was teased this morning, as a matter of fact, from Games Workshop, will make great radio, is the new Plastic Sisters. So you probably think, oh yeah, we've seen heads and weapons. No. They've actually got five or six different models. They actually showed out an entire squad, and with in addition to the one they showed off last weekend. And I have to say, they're keeping it up. They all look pretty cool. So curious to see when they, you know, it seems to be taking its time, but I mean, realistically, you can play the army now. So we'll see how that all pans out. Notice at my local game store, the Apocalypse stuff seems to be flying off the shelves. So if you haven't had a chance to pick up your Apocalypse items, you might want to do so, whether you want to play Apocalypse or not, because some of those army deals are a good deal. Specifically, the ones that come in one box. They're all about 30% savings when we calculated last week. I did go perusing on the webpage and found some other great deals, at least though I thought. So the one that caught my attention, Ray, Ruins of the Apocalypse Gaming Board Connect Collection. So check this out. I got.
Yep.
So what you get in this is two realms of battle. So that's 12 tiles, each one being 2 feet by 2 feet. Two Sector Imperialis Administratum. So that's the larger ones that came in Kill Team. Three Insector Imperialis Ruins. Those are the small ones that kind of, they're like barely a story tall. Two Imperium's Sanctum. So those are the ones with all the little statues on them. Two Imperius Basilicon. Those are the ones with all the flying buttresses. Three Imperialis Manufacturum, the cool add-back ones. And then keep it old school. One Honored Imperium. So the big statue and the Shattered Aquila and a couple of random crap flying around. So, retail, this goes for the amazing price of $1,425. But with the Apocalypse release, you can get it for only $1,425. Yeah, save clicks. You know, time is money. So, there you go. I was so excited because I was looking at this like, this could be like three or four tables worth of terrain ready to go. And No savings whatsoever. Yeah. So be careful when you go on the website, because there's the website is filled with all these quote-unquote Apocalypse deals. And some of them are deals. If they're in the box, you know, it says Apocalypse on them. If they're Whip store exclusives, just be careful.
Now, there were a couple of things that are going up for pre-order that actually are a bit of a deal. If someone wants to buy them. That would be the two new Star Collecting boxes for 40K.
Yeah, I thought I saw something about that. What's going on with those?
Yep. So there's one for Chaos and one for the Imperium. The Chaos one is actually Thousand Suns, which kind of surprised me. I never thought they'd do this. It's 21 models. It's Airmen, a box of Rubric Marines, and a box of Zangor, the 40K Zangors, which means the AOS Zangors. And the upgrade sprues to have pistol and chainsword, even though nobody actually uses that setup.
What do you mean?
And that's a crazy deal. I mean, we're talking, I mean, just for the two units, that's $95 in and of itself. So you're getting airmen for free. That being said, it's not really worth buying more than one. It's good for someone who's just going to start it. But some of the Start Collecting boxes are really good for helping to save some money to actually build an army. Like the, just for example, if someone were to want to do Tempestus, Militarum Tempestus army, buying four boxes for those boxes pretty much gets you to an army. At that point, after that point, you might want to either buy some more of the Torox Primes or the Planes. I think they're called Valkyries. But I mean, outside of that, you've pretty much got an army. The same can be said for quite a few of the Star Collecting. This one's a little bit different. It's not quite the case. The other one, Star Collecting box, the one that's for the Imperium, is Primaris Space Wolves. That's kind of cool because it's, well, two things. First off, it's the first Star Collecting for Primaris. Second off, it's both a way to get the Primaris Battle Leader that came out in Tooth and Claw, and it's a way to start a Primaris army for a decent price. So again, the Star Collectings are going for about 95 now. And looking at the value, you know, the Battle Leader is basically a lieutenant, which goes for about 30. It comes with aggressors, which are 50. And then intercessors, which are 60. So you're already looking at something that's about $140 for 95. But since it's Primaris Space Wolves, there's a good chance that it also comes with the Space Wolves upgrade kit for the Primaris. So that adds on another, $12 or $13 of value there.
I think I got it, but just in case, tell me the whole thing again. I wasn't listening.
Here's a question I never could answer. Primaris Space Marines. The upgrade kits, are they specific one for Primaris Marines, or are you using the same upgrade kits as the old ones?
They're different.
I figured they had to be because they're bigger models.
Now you can, so they're bigger, but there's certain things that are the same. For instance, I'm going to call them power armor units for Primaris. Their shoulder pads are the same size as the most updated non-Primaris Marines. This was so they could just make it easier for some people who had a bunch of, you know, customized shoulder pads. Okay. And I haven't tried it, but supposedly for like the aggressors, it's roughly the same size as the Terminator shoulder pads. That one I don't think is true, but supposedly it is.
Because basically, what I was thinking of, I was doing Death Watch. You have generic, buy one of these Start Collecting kits or one of these Apocalypse kits, so I get a ton of Primaris Marines on the cheap, and then which upgrade kit do I get to make sure I get to turn them all to Death Watch?
There's the Death Watch.
So it's because that's, I know that was the old one. So it's like, okay, that will work on the Primaris Marines.
Supposedly it will. I mean, it's, if you've got some lying around, it's definitely worth checking. I might have one of those shoulder pads lying around. So, I mean, I could at least try to stick it on and see if it fits. Obviously not during the recording.
That'd make great radio.
But
Ray is moving in closely. Tweezers at the ready. The glue has been applied to the right shoulder, glistening in the overhead light. Can I mean, we need golf commentators for that. That'd be awesome. Yeah. Anyway, other stupidity, just what's going on in my life. Have you watched that dumb show, Holy Moly?
I know what you're talking about. I've seen
it. It is god terrible, but it's like Wednesday night at prime time. There's like nothing else on. So in case you guys haven't seen this and you need something to watch while you're painting models, basically mix Wipeout with miniature golf. And they've got Ron Riggle, who's a famous comedian, and Joe Tessitore is actually, he was our local sports guy growing up, and he made it big. He actually was on ESPN as an anchor. And they do like total straight-faced golf commentary with some of the silliest comments you've ever heard as these people are trying to conquer this ridiculous course. It is quite hilarious. I mean, the commercials make it look so stupid. I'm like, all right, we'll watch it. And now I'm like hooked. I'm like, I can't wait. So yeah, somehow appointment TV in our house has become miniature golf mania and battle bots. So I just don't know how that happened, but
there are worse things that could be on TV.
That is true. The Honeydew channel is bad enough.
Yes.
Most of you know that is Home and Garden Network. That's a lot of fun. My wife is convinced that any project around the house can be completed in a weekend with the proper tools and enough labor. And I've concluded that any project around the house cannot be completed with at least 5 trips to Home Depot.
I mean, well, when you drive your car, the answer to that is obviously, yeah, that's how long it's going to take.
Oh, yes, my car's not exactly the largest thing in the world, so. Which is fun on tournament day, traveling with all that terrain. Keep thinking to myself, if there's ever a fire, I'm screwed. I'm just completely surrounded in combustible material.
Quick, save the army.
Yeah. At least this one, it was propane-ed. All right, enough goofiness. That's pretty much your news for the week. Lots of deals to be had with Apocalypse box sets, previews of the new Sisters of Battle, all kinds of neat stuff coming out. But there was actually some tournament action over the weekend, and we'll get into that right after this break.
Are you a gamer that has more bare plastic than you have time to paint? Do paintbrushes spontaneously combust when you hold them? If either of these is true, contact White Crow Studios and get your models painted by a college-trained professional painter. You can contact Bo at whitecrow.commissions@gmail.com and view his previously painted models at White Crow Studios on Facebook.
Welcome back after the break. We start into our tournament coverage to the legendary Island of Man from Warzone Man 2019. Yep. The only reason I know where this is because my very first war game was an Avalon Hill game called Kingmaker, which is the War of the Roses. So I like know these random towns. And on that, the Isle of Man, like if you just, there was no markers, there was no grid. It was just, you just put a marker there and like, I control all of Ireland. It's like, what? Entire Ireland is mine. And if you had enough ships, you could get back and forth. And I don't know, it was worth points. So, but luckily enough, there was a large tournament there. Ray, who was our top five?
All right. In fifth place, you had Felix Bartkowitz playing Imperium. Fourth place was Gavin Heritage playing Cult Mechanicus. In third place, we had Alex Heap playing Imperium. Second place was Conrad Bartkowitz playing Assyriani. And in first was Mark Crumbleholm playing Eldari.
Yeah, Mark's making another stab at making it back into the top 10. He's been in and out for quite some time. Looking at his Eldari list, looks something like this. He starts off with a Prophets of the Flesh battalion. Urien Rakath, a standard Hemoculus with Stinger Pistol and the Vexator Mask. He's got 3 units of 5 racks and 3 units of 7 Grotesques. He then goes in with a Cabal of the Blackheart Spearhead featuring an Archon with Venom Blade. And that makes him his Warlord with Labyrinth Cunning and, of course, the Writ of the Living Muse. 3 Ravagers with 3 Disintegrators, or a total of 9. And then rounds out the Vanguard unit of Soaring Spite. That's Harlequins for you monkey out there. Featuring a Troopmaster with a Fusion Pistol, 3 Death Jesters, and 6 Skyweaver Bikes with Haywires and Zephyrglaives. So this is quite the old school list. This was basically what everybody else took to LVO, self-included. The only thing that's missing is a Doomseer and a Warlock to give you a Jinx and Guy. Jinx. So interesting that it still works after all this time. It's getting the Archon gives them the rerolls. So reroll ones to hit, reroll ones to wound, which interesting. There's a lot of argument on the among us Drukhari here that maybe Flayed Skull might be better because it eliminates cover. The Soaring Spite Vanguard, we've seen that a couple times. We saw it at Nova for the first time using the 3 Death Jesters because they're as cheap as chips, 45 points each. I'm giving you a Troop Master, so you at least get the +1 to command points. And the 6 Skyweaver Bikes are just... I've not had success everyone else has with them. Everybody says they just pick up vehicles. Because it's D6 shots, you still got a hit, and then it's mortal wounds on a 4+, And then sixes, you get D3 mortal wounds against vehicles. It just, so many rolls. I've had times where I've inflicted 23 wounds on a vehicle and other rolls where I inflicted 4 wounds on a vehicle. So definitely be prepared to spend command points on Fade and Fire with that unit. So that's a little bit of list planning, at least my experience with that. Conrad Parkowski is also, he's been in and out of the top 10 with the ITC. Looking at his Asuriani list that came in second. Starts with a air wing detachment featuring 3 Craft-Willed Hunter Exarchs and 1 Hemlock Wraith Fighter. He then comes in with a Craft-Willed, interesting, Ulathe, not Alatok, but Ulathe Craft-Willed Battalion featuring a Skyrunner, a 5-star Skyrunner, and a Warlock Skyrunner. And then 2 units of Dire Avengers, 1 unit of Guardian Defenders, and the Guardian unit is the big blob of 20 Defenders with 2 heavy platforms. He also has 2 Wave Serpents and to transport his Dire Avengers around. And then last but not least, he's got a Craft-Willed Sam Hain. He's got Autok Skyrunner with the Banshee Mask and a Fusion Gun with Laser Lance, a Farseer on foot, 8 Storm Guardians, and then 9 Wild Riders with Scatter Lasers. So the Crimson Hunters do the heavy lifting for knights and vehicles, with each with 2 star cannons each. The Hemlock Wraith Fighter is there to not only provide additional smites, but he's probably doing some leadership tricks with those shock pods. And then, interesting with the Wild Riders, 9 scatter laders, being Sam Hain, he can move and shoot with heavy weapons and with no penalty. And I don't think he's going to scare anybody with 8 Storm Guardians, but okay. But then he outfitted the Autark for a close combat. So I'm kind of confused. Because the Autark by himself was only a threat to himself. So I'm not really sure what's going on there. Not sure. I'd have to see this guy. I'll search the internet for a video. Maybe we can find some streaming on how Conrad works his list, because it seems like it's some contradictions there. We'll figure it out. But interesting tournament. Even Mark winning the tournament, he actually went 4-0-1. Nobody went a perfect 5-0. So with 4 wins and a tie, he was able to beat out 6 players that went 4-1. So congratulations, Mark, on the win. So trivia question here, Ray.
Okay.
Allies of Convenience have had more podcast episodes or tournaments in the last 6 months? The answer would be tournaments. They had their Allies of Convenience GT this past weekend. And although they do a ton more Facebook postings, which if you ever want to see a massive beard, you got to check out their Facebook Live posts. But Stockport, England is where they had their event. And your top players, see how they did there.
So, in 5th place, we had Joe Malum playing Eldari. In 4th, Inez Wilson, I think that's how you say that name, playing Forces of the Hive Mind. In 3rd, Matt Robertson playing Imperium. In 2nd was Anthony Chu playing Eldari. And in first place, Tom Higginbottom playing Orcs.
Yeah, interesting kind of this tournament is pretty much a who's who of the UK ETC teams. So not only Matt Robinson and Joe Malum have done really well in the past, but interesting to see some familiar faces from years of old. Josh Roberts came in 7th. Mike Collins came in 9th. Brother to Josh, Nathan Roberts, came in 13th. And also making a name for herself, Bethany Taylor with Cult Mechanicus, came in 15th. So nice to see some familiar names and faces. Judging from the scores, it looks like they used ETC missions, so everything's on a 0-20 scoring system. But Tom actually won the event with Orcs, and his list looks something like this. Starts off with an Evil Sons battalion, actually 2 identical war bosses with custom shooter, power claw, and a tech squig. Then he's got 3 units of boys. 2 of them are 28 strong with shootas and tank buster bombs and a boss dab with a choppa and a big choppa. And then the other unit is also 30 boys, but they're all sluggas and choppas with 3 tank buster bombs. Second detachment is another battalion of bad moons. It's got 2 weird boys, 1 with the jump, the other one with warpath. It's got 1 unit of 30 boys, all with shootas. And then the second unit is a smaller one. It's only 10. Looks like you probably put them in some sort of transport. Perhaps. Perhaps not. Guess not. And then he's also got his third is 10 models of Gretchen in a single troop slot there. And then finally in battalion, third battalion. I love how orcs always get all these battalions. I can barely fit like 2 into my armies. Third battalion of orcs, Death Skulls, Big Mech with shock attack gun and a Grot Oiler, and that's his warlord. And of course he takes the relic souped up shock attack gun and another weird boy for Fist of Gork. Troop slots, he's got 3 unit 10 Gretchen, and then in the heavy support slot, he's got mech guns. Call Ben, they're stealing the stuff in England.
Uh-huh.
1 unit of 5 and 2 units of 6. Interesting, I don't see... Yeah, it is. There, right. So, large blobs for board control. The jump gives them the mobility he needs to threat downfield. I got to double check what Warpath does. I have to remind myself what that does for a power. But then, of course, he's got the souped-up shaka gun to take out large targets, especially Knigets. So, that's pretty interesting stuff. Yep. Anthony Jew came in second place with an Eldari list, and these heavy flyer lists are super popular in England for some reason. But if you're looking to what does that really look like, here's an example. So he starts with his first air wing detachment, 5 flyers, 3 Crimson Hunter Exarchs, and 2 Crimson Hunters. The Exarchs are armed with star cannons, whereas the regular Hunters are armed with Bright Lance. His second air wing is a Drukhari one, Cobble of the Black Heart. He's got 2 Razorwing Jet Fighters and 2 Void Raven Bombers. Interesting enough, the Void Raven Bombers have Dark Scythes, which curious to see how that worked out for him because I've been experimenting with that myself. His third detachment finally is a battalion, a Latok. He's got Autark with on foot. Look at that. It's also his Warlord. He's got Falchion's Wing to give him some maneuverability. He's got a Farseer Skyrunner with Smite and Doom and Guide, and then a Warlock Skyrunner with Protect and Smite. And he's got 1 unit of 20 in Guardian Defenders with the 2 heavy weapon platforms to soak up wounds and 2 units of 5 Rangers. So this list screams to me, I play ETC missions. I don't know. This I'd be curious to play. I know it's a trap, but because what he's going to do is put those 20 Guardian Defenders out there and go ahead, try and kill all my units so you don't have boots on the ground. But they have all those stratagems to buff them up and plus the powers, protect and a couple of the other things, and then put guide on those guys so they have all those defenders with all those shots. So it may not be as easy as it looks, but who knows? I've not seen anybody with that many flyers in real life, so I'm curious to see how this would look on the table. But yeah, that's 9 flyers if you're trying to keep track at home.
Quite a few.
Quite a few.
Faith is our shield.
Let's move on to our next tournament, staying in merry old England for the Bristol Open. Bristol City Open, excuse me.
In 5th place, we had Dan Fortnum with Orcs. In 4th, Sam Hogg with Imperium. 3rd was David Horn with Chaos. 2nd, Jay Middlecott with Imperial Knights. And 1st was Joshua Conant with Gene Stealer Cult.
So for the second time this week, the top winners did not go undefeated. Matter of fact, Jay Middlecott and Joshua tied in round 4. Joshua was able to get mass more points and take the championship by a mere 5 battle points. In the last round. That's not true. Let me take that back. He actually outscored him by quite a bit because he did score a lot in the earlier rounds. Ah, take that, you Imperial Knight player. I'd love to tell you all about Josh's Gene Stoller cult list, but we can't. He didn't upload it. So, boo to you. But we'll talk about the runner-up and his Imperial Knight list. It's, well, it fits on a napkin. His Warlord is a Knight Crusader with Avenger Gatling Gun and Iron Storm Missile Pod. He also takes the Relic of Armor of the Sainted Ion. Interesting. Two Knight Crusaders and an Armature Helverin. That's the whole list.
Yep. Knight Sorrow short.
Yep. Nice and short. Easy for transport. Back and forth. It's one of those. Don't leave your models behind. Awesome.
Eldar enemy spotted.
All right. So we now leave merry old England. There was actually a tournament stateside, believe it or not. And it was actually a pretty big deal. It was the Cleveland Chainsword Championships, their inaugural event this year. Love us to Westlake, Ohio. Ray, how did the players do there?
So, in fifth place was Rob Gibson with Chaos. Fourth place was DJ Timms with Imperium. In third was Kevin Raitz with Goths. Second was Jeffrey Beeman with Necrons. And in first was TJ Lanigan with Chaos.
So TJ takes it again, making a further statement into getting higher up into the ITC rankings. Take a look at his list. Chaos, he starts off with a battalion of demons, Chaos Undivided. HQ choices, a Changecaster, a Poxspring, and a Sloppity Bile Popper. Piper, Popper, whatever. Okay, it's Nurgle. Troop slot, he's got 28 Pink Horrors. 29, is that correct? Nope, 30 Plague Walk. Two units of 30 Plague Walk Bearers. So big old board control, then another big blob that comes out of Deep Strike to shoot everything. Awesome. Then he's got a Supreme Command detachment from Thousand Suns, featuring Ahriman, Demon Prince with the High Magister and the Helm of the Third Eye. He's also the Warlord with wings. He's got a second Demon Prince with Malefic Talons and wings. And then lastly, brings in a Vanguard detachment featuring another Demon Prince of Nurgle, also with wings. And then he's just stealing from Don here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 Blight Lord Terminators, 2 Foul Blight Spawns, and then he reserved, looks like 7 points for reinforcements. So that old trick where you kill one of the horrors and then he spawns out a Brimstone Horror. The idea is that if you kill it in Overwatch, he can place the Brimstone Horror within 1 inch of where the guy died. So he gets himself like an extra inch and a half, 2 inches closer to you on the charge. But a pretty standard cookie cutter list. We've seen this 100 times. So big old block of take me off the table. And my guess, he's probably taking a recon as well on secondaries. This headboard center and camp out. I'm touching every objective. Go ahead, knock me off it. Jeffrey Beeman playing Necrons. Game in second. This is exciting news. Here we go. And right off the bat, he's claiming this is an original list. And I love it. It says right on his list, totally not Chad's list. Awesome. Chad, if you're still in your list, feel bad for you. So the first is a battalion. It is Defrat Dynasty, featuring a Cryptek with Veil of Darkness. And it's the super new one where he's surfing on the a Scarab. And a generic Overlord with Staff of Light. He's got 3 units of 5 Immortals with Tesla Carbines. 1 unit of 6 Destroyers, all with Gauss Cannons. Air Wing detachment follows that with, so hard to read, 3 Doom Scythes, and then he follows it up with a Spearhead detachment of yet another Cryptek, and good lord, 10 Tomb Blades, all with Twin Tesla Carbines, and 3 Doomsday Arcs. At first I was like, oh, is this list we always see? Then I go, wait a minute, where's Emotech?
Well, you said which dynasty was it again?
He's got The heavy support is Sawtek.
Okay.
And the battalion is Nefrat. Interesting.
Okay. Yeah, so with his choice of which one's a Sawtek, which is the heavy. I'm a little bit surprised that he only went with the Cryptek, but the Cryptek is what you're going to want to have in there if you're only going to have one HQ. Just because it's going to be a little bit more helpful to the heavy support choices.
Yep.
That being said, Emotech is... Okay, now I'm pulling out my codex. Not so much pulling out, so I'm just taking stuff off of it real quick.
Dancing bear!
Yeah, so most of Emotech's usefulness involves infantry. So his Pharaon ability is infantry, and his My Will Be Done is infantry. So, I mean, when you consider that, the Cryptek's just going to be a better choice because if you give him the Kenuptek cloak, first off, it's got a better movement if it's going to try to keep up with like things like Doomsday Arcs or Annihilation Barges, things like that.
He's got the Destroyers, so I think he's probably skirting those two together.
Okay, yeah, those two. Other choice, which is the Chronometron. Did it say if he had that on there? Which one did he have?
Nope. So the infantry guy, Cryptek, he's actually, both of them have the Canoptic cloak, so they're both flying around. So the one that's with the infantry has got the Veil of Darkness, and then the one that is with the Doomsday Arcs, he did not give a relic, but it is the Warlord.
Okay. So with the Doomsday Arc, yeah, you want the Canoptek cloak, which is, it's just regular war gear option. The biggest reason for that is because that Canoptek cloak allows you to select a single friendly dynasty model that has the living cloak or the living metal ability, which vehicles. There are other models too, but in this case, it's all on the Doomsday Arc. And you can have that model regain D3 lost wounds rather than one from living metal.
Comes in handy. So yeah, keep those things firing. You got a lot of additional downfield threat from the Doomsides and the long range of the Doomsday Arcs. I guess I'm still enamored. I'm not saying it's a better choice. I just, the Emotech being able to do two of those abilities, so you can affect two of those mortal units, and then you've got the additional stratagem, so they're all of a sudden their Teslas are going off on 4+. So.
Well, again, you don't need Emotech for the stratagem.
No. But you need Emotech to be able to give be my will, do my bidding, or whatever it's called.
Yeah, but again, that works on infantry. Yeah, so, right. I mean, it was his Nefrit, you said?
Yeah, it was Nefrit.
So...
But to think as we stand still, you reroll ones? Is that the one?
Nefrek is if a unit with this code advances at 6 inches to its move characteristic for that movement phase, instead of rolling a dice. If the unit is being affected by My Will Be Done or Wave of Command, ability adds 7 instead. In addition, if a unit with this code advances, its models can move across models and terrain as if they were not there. What kind of models did you say were in that particular unit?
That's the Cryptek, the Overlord, the Mortals, the Destroyers.
Yeah, so I think it comes down partly to them being able to go through terrain as if they weren't there. That being said, be the weapons. The weapons could be taken into account. So the destroyers have Gauss cannon. Those are heavy. That wouldn't be a thing here. What was the troop's choice in there?
The three immortals with Tesla.
That's it. So the the Tesla carbine, I think, is what it is, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's an assault weapon. So you can do it advanced. First off, you're automatically getting at 6 or 7 inches. And then you can still fire twice with that weapon. So it's one of those things.
Yeah, you can advance without penalty. Okay.
And then the Necrons are almost everything for Necrons. It's a 24-inch range on weapons. So if you're going up against a faster army, something that can keep away, 24 inches away, you being able to do you're not doing it where you can get up to 7, you're only getting the 6 inches. That's 11 inches for your average Necron. So immortals are able to get an 11 inch movement, which pretty much turns their weapon into a 35-inch range weapon, in a sense.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah, that makes a lot more sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're sacrificing a little shooting power for a tremendous amount of mobility, which is usually what you last thing you think of when you think of Necrons. You think of 24-inch range and can't get out of their own way. So... that is a good point. All right. One other list I want to talk about real quick tonight is Kevin Wright's with his Goths list. So we're playing another Orc list. Yes, but it's a little different from what we've been talking about, so I want to bring it to everyone's attention. So his first is a specialist attachment. Looks like it is a battalion, but it is a Dreadwaw. And he's got two big mechs, and of course he's got the souped-up shotgun on one of them. And he's got one gargantuan unit of 30 boys and then two units of 10 Gretchen. But he's got 14 tank busters with a boss knob, all with a rocket launchers in his elite slot. And then the second battalion is Goths, and they are two weird boys, three units of 10 Gretchen. So interesting. I need to look up on why you would do that, other than just pick up two weird boys, some fodder, and three command points. All right, moving on. And then the second, the third battalion in the group is more Goths. But this time around, that's right, folks, he's back. He came in third place. Gazgul Thraka and a weird boy. And then two units of 30 boys, all with sluggas and choppas. And then he's got a knob with a wog banner and a pain boy with a power claw. That's kind of cool. I haven't heard from Gazgul Thraka in quite some time.
Of course, I can't remember the last time I saw him on the list.
It's been not in this edition, I can tell you that. So that is pretty wild. I have to do some research. I don't even remember what he does anymore. I remember the Goths are, I think they're plus one strength on the charge. I have to double check that, but do some research and find out what they did. But that is your coverage of the Cleveland Chainsword Championship right after the break. Ray and I will delve into some of the new findings of stratagems and relics from Chaos Knigget and then wrap up the show shortly after that. Be back right after the break. Hey there, Eric from the Exterminatus podcast, and I'm talking to all you tournament organizers out there. Do you have an event coming up? Now, naturally, we talk about all those GT and major level events coming up throughout week to week, but we usually do it after the fact. If you want to talk about your event ahead of time to get some more people to come to your event, this is your opportunity. We are opening up our ad space for some lucky TOs to you know, let us know about your event. Give us a minute to talk about what makes your event special and glow about your event, so drive some like-minded competitive 40K players to your particular area. Hit us up on our Facebook page for more details, and we'd love to support your local community. So here our way of giving back to tournament organizers throughout the world. Only your friends here at the Exterminatus Podcast. We are back after the break, and we're here to talk about all things big and stompy with spikes. And that would be, of course, the upcoming Chaos Knight Codex. So it's been leaked out some of these stratagems available, and this is really where the Chaos Knights really shine in terms of being a little bit different from your Imperial Knight Codex. So some of the ones that caught our eye right off the bat. First one, because it sounded great at first, and then I'm thinking, how are you going to make this work on the tabletop, is the Ion Aegis. It's 2 command points, which seems awfully steep, but your knight cannot move for any reason. So that includes movement phase or charge phase. But units that are wholly within 6 inches of the Knigget get a 5-up invulnerable save. I don't know, if you're giving up movement and 2 command points, I think I wanted more than 6-inch range. But I don't know, I thought maybe 12-inch would be a little more practical. But I don't know, for some reason I was kind of eh on that one. Interesting. We've seen this stratagem in quite a few other codices, but interesting that the command points have changed. A tyrannical court gives you the opportunity of having multiple warlords, but in the past it was you pay it and you could get one extra warlord, or you pay it and you can, like the Drakari version, one homunculus, one succubus. The Chaos Knight version is for 1 command point, you get 1 extra warlord, and for 3 command points, you get a third warlord. So I thought that we haven't seen that mechanic with this type of stratagem before, so I don't know if that's foreshadowing any FAQs or changes for future codices. So I thought that was interesting there. Ray, which ones did you like?
Well, one of the ones I thought was kind of interesting was the Spiteful Demise. Kind of definitely see where that's useful. That's 2 CP and a Chaos Knight model explodes on a 4+ instead of a 6+. Some of them look kind of familiar. You got things like Death Grip, and then Devastating Reach. Both are pretty similar to what you can find in the Imperial Knights. I did like Break the Line a little bit. It's kind of, you know, situational. You could, in the fight phase, pick one enemy unit within 1 inch of an iconoclast model that made a charge this turn, and then I can reroll all hits. That's 2 CP.
I like the idea of rerolling all hits, especially because if you're doing stomp attacks, whatever, with the titanic feet, and that's a lot of attacks, those rerolls will go far. So I could see that. That could be pretty. I think if you're going head to head with something, like another knight where you only get your 4 or 5 attacks, not quite as useful, but still pretty cool. Like you said,
well, Diabolical Rift is kind of useful, especially if you're going against someone who's got a lot of psychers. So 2 CP, enemy psychers suffer perils on any double instead of just a double 1 or double 6 when they're within 12 inches.
Yeah, I've used that with other armies, a similar piece of war gear, and that is pretty awesome, especially for if you just feel like you're being overwhelmed in the psychic phase or not even participating in the psychic phase. It's fun to watch your opponent just watch his psychers just melt in front of you. So it's kind of neat.
Yep. Oh, here's one I forgot about. Pack Dogs. 1 CP when a war dog finishes a charge move, other war dogs within 12 inches can reroll charges.
Yeah, that was kind of neat. I like that. I had to double check the war dogs. So if you aren't familiar, the war dogs are the halverns, the mini knights that we've seen come out, equivalents. I'm trying to remember what close combat weapons they've got.
So we're talking about the Armigers, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So the Armiger Warglaive,
I remember right. It's got the smaller chain sword and the Meltagun. So
that's pretty cool. Speaking of War Dogs, they also have a neat little stratagem for 1 CP, Sky Reaper Protocols. Get to reroll hits versus units with the flag keyword. And I really like stuff like this, because when you get that bad matchup, you're just like, ugh, how am I going to do this? Well, at least you have something in your stratagems to kind of help offset that. I suppose the Days of Yore, where you frantically search for the Skyfire Nexus objective.
That's for War Dogs only?
Yeah, which I thought was interesting.
Well, that's not bad. Of course, the armor size have two different options. One's the melt, got the Melta weapon. Definitely good against vehicles. Or you've got the other one, which is escaping me, but the DACA one, the one that shoots something with shooting. And of course, being able to have that better chance of hitting the vehicle is always useful.
Moving ahead to the relics real quick, they some really interesting ones, and we talked a little about the importance of making any doubles a reason for your opponent's psychers to take a Perils of the Warp. They have something similar with the Zichian Pyro Throne, and Knight becomes a psyker, so guess what, he knows Smite, which is kind of neat. And he can deny two powers, which I thought was also really cool. But the best part is, if whatever reason you roll like I do and your knight is somehow killed by Perils of the Warp, don't bother rolling. He automatically explodes. So I thought that was pretty cool. Oops, I read this too quickly. He can actually cast and deny one psychic power per turn, but he has the Warp Haunted Hull Warlord trait. He can actually boost it up to two denies per turn. Actually, it's pretty cool. So, big fan of that one. And the other one I'm a big fan of is the Blasphemous Engine. This is an oldie but a goodie. Double the number of wounds left on the damage tier for that particular model. So, basically, he's going to be top tier for most of the game. It's just, so frustrating. So if I remember the tiers right, 15 through 28 is top tier, and then I think it's 7 through 14. So even at 8 wounds remaining, he's still top tier.
Yep.
Just nasty stuff. And I'm not sure how to pronounce this one, the Diamonus. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. It's a relic laser destructor. So if you don't remember what that stat line is, range 60, heavy 3, strength 16, AP minus 4, D6 damage with each successful wound. But when revolving this attack, any unmodified wound roll of a 6 inflicts an additional D3 mortal wounds in addition to any other damage. That looks wonderful. So before we wrap this up, our little coverage here of Chaos Knights, two things that I found that are not included in the Knight Codex, which, interesting, I think it was probably a major headache saver, but also interesting how the synergy will work with regular Chaos armies. None of the Knights have marks. I mean, we allude to relics and whatnot that they're part of a particular Chaos God affiliation, but there's no particular, I've given the mark of Khorne or Zeech or whatever to a particular knight. None of them have that. And likewise, none of them have the demon code word. So there's no buffing from your demon princess and making your Chaos Knight operate a little bit better.
I think this is just a step towards them making it where it's harder and harder for you to use things like stratagems or any unforeseen combos with psyker yep. powers.
I would agree. I think it's a good game balance that they did it that way. But it's interesting. I'd be curious to see, you know, how do things balance together. I also think of what is the CP drain. I don't see these I don't see this army relying on stratagems as much as other armies, but the unfortunate thing is a lot of the stratagems, 2 CP, they're just going to add 3 CP in some other cases. You're really spending a lot of command points for what few stratagems you have. So,
yeah, it's definitely going to be a light CP army, much like Imperium. In fact, as far as building goes, if you're going to do pure, it's going to be exactly the same, where if you've got, I believe it's at least one, I can't remember what they call them for Chaos, but if you've got at least one of the mid-size knights, you're going to get 3 CP. If you have only the small Armiger size, it's I think one, either one or none. And then if it's three of the large ones, then you get 6 CP.
Okay. Yeah, you're probably right, not a whole lot. So I'm thinking more, what I've been seeing a lot of pairings is you've got your Chaos Knight detachment, and then you throw in a small detachment of Red Corsairs to make up the difference and get you more CP that way.
I mean, at that point, are you going to use a lot of CP for the knights, or are you going to focus them more on the...
Yeah, I don't know. That's an excellent question. Because just because you have the CP, you also have more mouths to feed in terms of strategic assets. So I'm not sure. I'm curious to see how that will play out on the table. I know there's a lot of people trying to get a high score on Battlescribe, but getting it on the table is going to be a little bit different. And that's one of the things we'll have to watch carefully as players make their rounds throughout the tournaments. So, hey, I did figure out one of my favorite relics here. Want to make your knight into a Dark Reaper? Give him the Helm of Warp Sight. When resolving attacks made with a ranged weapon by this model, with this relic, ignore all hit roll modifiers. Yeah, so take all that, right, Eldari. So, yeah, I definitely be curious to see how these all come together, because I don't think the best way to do is just take a Chaos version of Brandon Grant's list from LVO. I think there's other synergies involved, and so far, the most of what I've seen is, yeah, a Red Corsairs unit to give you the command points, various arrangements of different knights, but don't know. I'm not sure what the best one is yet, and I think we still will find out, so we'll keep you posted. So with that, we will be back right after this break and go over the ITC Top 10 as well as upcoming events in the ITC. See you right after the break. All right, welcome back after the break, and time to break into your ITC Top 10. Looking at the Top 10 for this week, we have in 10th place, Junior Affelje. We'll get it right one of these weeks, I'm sure, at 955 points. Still hanging on to that 10th spot. 9th place, the other guy from Canada, Devin Swan, with 966. 8th place, John Lennon, with 989 points, just 1 point shy of 7th place, Nick Nottavati, with 990. 5 points ahead of him is 6th place, Jeff Robinson. Manny Chima holds a 2-point lead for 5th place over Jeff. Then we zip up another 5 points to Chris Blackham, who's in 4th place. Richard Siegler holds down the 3rd place slot at 1,011 points, 9 points over Chris Blackham. TJ Lanigan, who we spoke about, won a tournament this weekend. He holds down the 2nd place slot with a 75-point lead over Richard Siegler, but still way out in front with almost a 55-point lead, is the Canadian conqueror himself, Jim Vessel. Ray, what events do we have coming up in the ITC this coming weekend?
All right. This weekend, we've got the ATC in Chattanooga, Tennessee. There is the Hogtowner 2019 in Beverly Hills, Toronto, Ontario. Me neither. There is the Hometown 40K tournament in Edmonton, Alberta. Warzone Houston in Houston, Texas. And then I'm also going to make a quick announcement for a tournament, a local tournament actually, in a couple weekends' time. It's on the 28th. This is an RTT, but they've asked to get promoted, and we're all for that. It is the Old Wolf War Games Summer Slam. It is a ITC event, 3 rounds. They've chosen to go with 1,500 points. They're going to use all current FAQ and codexes up to the date of the event. They're going to do 2-hour rounds. They're looking at a 20-player maximum. And they are going to institute a few limitations. So if you're into playing a little bit differently, this might be an event for you. They say they're going to do a max of 2 units of the same data sheet, but they are allowing for exceptions so that you can use strategies such as kill shots that require 3.
Rule of 2 instead of 3. Okay.
They've also set a max power level at 32, but they are still allowing Forge World. There's going to be awards for first, second, third, excellent, best painted, and the wooden spoon.
One other event to bring to you. Sorry, I just messed that up.
This is going to be in.
What was the date
Chandler,
on that event again?
Arizona.
All right.
The 28th of July.
That's a Sunday. The previous Saturday to that, July 20th, there will be an RTT at the Summer Siege at the Imperial Outpost Games in Glendale, Arizona. It'll be a one-day event and will feature your standard ITC mission pack, 2,000 points, and that is available on the BCP app. If you'd like us to talk about your event in advance, hit us up on our Facebook page. More than happy to promote your events, and make sure you tell your friends that you heard about it here on the Exterminatus podcast. Also, tell your friends about the Exterminatus podcast and be sure to leave a review either on iTunes or Spotify. Let us know what you think. Can't fix it if we don't know what's broken. Like to hear from you out there in the field. In the meantime, look for additional updates and breaking news on our Facebook page. Until then, my name's Eric.
I'm Raymond.
And thank you for listening to the Exterminatus podcast.